It's time to turn to the WUKY Sports page with your host, Keith Elkins, revealing conversations and stories you thought you knew from prominent Kentucky sports figures. Now, here once again is Keith Elkins.
Brooks Downing is with us today. He is the founder and president of BD Global, and it is a global firm involved in promotion and marketing of sports events, and we'll talk with Brooks extensively about that. But he also has a strong background with University of Kentucky Athletics, both as an intern and then later as the sports information director, late 90s, early 2000s, and also worked with the great broadcaster Kaywood Ledford at Kaywood's production company back in the early 90s. So a wide range of experience, and all of it touching base with this Kentucky fan base. Brooks, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Keith.
Well, let's talk about BD Global first. And I know that bring us up to date on where things stand right now with that. You've been at it for a while.
Yep.
You're staying busy. I was glad to get the time with you because I know you might be in Las Vegas or you might be in the Bahamas or you might be doing a lot of things in a lot of different places. So what's going on with BD Global?
Well, BD Global has kind of fashioned itself as a sports event marketing group, and we run a lot. We like to own and operate our own events. And so we've become probably biggest in the two areas of college basketball and professional golf. And so in college basketball, I think we probably ran somewhere in the neighborhood of like 65 games just the week of Thanksgiving in three different cities and two different countries this past November. We do that every November. We turned around and went back to Vegas in December and sold out MGM Grand Garden Arena with Indiana and Arizona. Year before, we set an attendance record for the state of Nevada for basketball, with a showdown between Duke and Gonzaga. That was one of the more popular games played last season. And so, you know, we deal with a pretty high level of college hoops. Just got off the phone with UConn women. We're planning to come down to our tournament in the Bahamas in 2024, so you have to work well out in advance. But we've kind of established ourselves as one of the bigger, I call it, content operators. We provide a lot of college basketball content. It means events that we own and operate. We're contracting the teams, the hotels, the arenas, the venues, the television partner, all of that we work with. And so we're a full-service turnkey group, and we do a ton of hoops. I'm not sure there's too many that do as much as we do in the space, maybe outside of an ESPN events group. So I think we're right there. But we kind of do it under the radar. We're headquartered right here in Lexington, which is, you know, I'm a ninth generation Lexingtonian, so it means a lot to be here and be able to operate on a global platform like we do. And then we have our two pro golf tournaments. You know, a lot of folks know we brought the Barbasol to Lexington. We no longer run it, but we have two on the Corn Ferry Tour circuit. We may add a couple of more there, which is the young guys that where they earn their card to play on the PGA Tour. So do two of those to start the season in the Bahamas. So I forced Keith to go down to the Bahamas
it's
multiple times and spend three or four weeks in January for golf, which is, you know, a tough assignment. Yeah. We've mastered it.
Yes, it's tough being a hands-on CEO in those types of situations. What kind of a team do you have now?
We have a small group. We've got some local guys, Josh Franklin, Glenn Pfister, John Allball, who have been with me. John's been with me since pretty early on. He was one of Danny Haney's guys over at Lexington Catholic, if you remember Danny Haney and the great basketball teams he had it there with the Knights. But John started working with me early on, and Glenn and Josh joined the staff. Andre Fouché, a name you'll know, that worked in athletics as an intern for me years ago and been with Cincinnati basketball and Vanderbilt basketball. He's back working with us. So we just keep it a small staff, four or five. I think it's a lesson we learned going into the pandemic. We'd had a lot, and we're feeling pretty comfortable and grew our staff a little bit. And the pandemic hits, and it's tough when you have to look people in the eye and say, hey, I just can't afford to keep you. We have no business. Mm-hmm. You know, sports was shut down.
Sure. Yeah.
And so we went through a real tough time there and then bounced back with two of our best years we've ever had the last 2 years. So excited about where our business is and how we continue to grow.
Well, we'll come back around to BD Global in a few minutes, but you had to, as you grew up and then finished college and moved into your career, you went from I would say, fan to employee to now business owner. Tell me a little bit about the start of that process. You had to be a sports fan when you were a kid, right?
Oh, no question. I was just telling somebody the other day, you know, we had a reunion, Keith, and I was part of the 96, 97, and 98 teams as a sports information director there at Kentucky. And yet I quickly, you know, recalled being probably 10 or 11 years old when Kentucky beat Indiana up in Dayton, mm-hmm. 1975, I believe it was. And their caravan heading back to Lexington. And my father and mother owned a farm right there across from the horse park on I-75. And we all timed it out and got out there on the bridge, the overpass of Ironworks Road over top of I-75. And there must have been 50 of us from all around that little area that was there just to wave at the bus as it drove by with all the police escort and everything else. So, you know, my roots are fully embedded here. I cried when John Wooden didn't get teed up and ran out on the court and beat us in the 75 championship game with Kevin Greavy. And I've told Kevin that story. He cried too, he said. Yeah. But you're raised that way. And, you know, Kentucky basketball has always had that appeal to the masses here in the state. You know, we're not a rich state. We don't have professional sports. We got a few things we hang our hat on, and one of them has always been Kentucky basketball. And it's been I wrote Cameron's book when he graduated. We called it A Dream Come True, and I'm not sure if it wasn't more apt for me than it was to him with the title of that book, because to have that opportunity to then later work at Kentucky and work for the basketball program. And now to say I work for arguably the best 3 years in all of college basketball since the Fab Five, right? And that 48, 49, 50, 51 teams back there that Rupp had were obviously untouchable if there ever was an untouchable team. But that 96, 97, 98 was an awful lot of fun. And you know, it's hard these days. I don't know if that'll ever be duplicated. So there's a little piece of pride and humbleness that you get being a part of that.
Yeah, and it was a great era. And as you look back on it now, the further away we get from it, the more you realize it just how hard it was. And I want to ask you about those teams as we move along. But so you were a big fan and emotionally invested in all of that. But at some point, you began to think, maybe I can make a career out of this.
Well, you know, I got my start right here at WKY, where we're obviously recording it in brand new studios, a little bit further away from campus these days, but a place like where you started too, Keith. And I don't know how you found out about it. I was kind of had changed majors two or three times, wasn't certain what I wanted to do, and saw an ad in the Kentucky Colonel to join the broadcast teams for men's basketball and football. And the general manager at the time, and you might remember his name, I can see his face.
Don Wheeler.
Mr. Wheeler was great at – that was kind of like his baby, right? Yes. And he wanted – they didn't really have any interest, didn't know what the other programming was that was going on UKY other than NPR radio. And yet he had this little special play, so I applied. And didn't think anything more about it. And I'm a sophomore or what have you there in the mid-80s. And I get a call from an upperclassman. Hey, we're going to do the game Saturday. And me and another guy are going to be on the radio. Would you like to come keep stats for us? And so I said, sure. So I show up that first day. I pop up. Cool story, Keith. I mean, you know, you pop up in the press box at Commonwealth Stadium. And it's like, I can only imagine – one of the biggest aha moments I ever had, like, well, this is pretty darn cool, right? And I'm looking around, there's all the media people, there's the Rob Bromleys of the world and others that are floating around. And then, you know, we go check in and we got a little booth, and next door is, you know, Kaywood and Ralph. And we're, you know, my guys are going to be on the radio. I'm going to keep stats. And there's Mike Dotson, who also got the call to keep stats. Mm-hmm. And so we started the very same day in this industry.
Yeah.
And of course, Mike has gone on to run the UK network, run the NCAA radio network. I went on to get into the PR side, and it's just been an incredible journey. But that's kind of where I caught the bug and changed my major, changed it over to telecom, got in, went full feet, you know, both feet in on that deal, got excited about it, and then got out and got that, did an internship with UK Athletics for a year and a half. I was there when Eddie got fired. I was there when Rick got hired, CM got hired. Just an incredible run. There is a book in here somewhere that's going to come out in the not so distant future, I think. But I had the bug at that point.
Yeah, and it's amazing too. Those experiences as a student and as an intern, you're around these great moments, these eras that UK fans, at least those of us of a certain age, have clear memories of and are significant moments, not always great moments, but significant moments in the program's history.
I feel like Forrest Gump. I mean, I felt like I was
said
at
the same thing.
I felt like I was at every defining moment in the modern era of Kentucky basketball. I got to be a part of a number of those, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a picture. I've got two pictures in my home. One's of me. I'd set up the telecom equipment on the Patino hiring, and I had to get it, and I had to start it right when the press conference started. And if you remember, they did it in a boardroom up on top of the Patterson office tower,
right.
I think is where it was, if I remember right. And big boardroom, tons of media, no room in there to have a press conference. And yet there we are at the end. And I'm standing up, and there's, you know, Chris Cameron, who's the PR guy, our SID, Rena Vecchini, myself, Bernie von der Heide with UK PR, Carl Nathy may have been up there as well. We're all kind of there flanking CM and Coach Patino. And then fast forward however many years later, 8 years later, and here's Tubby being announced. Now I'm the full-time SID. Now I'm up there to get him in position. Same picture, same room, a few different faces. And it's like, wow, this is just, it's hard to put into words.
Yeah, sometimes if you happen to see a photo from that era and you see yourself in there in the background, but you're always there. You know,
yeah, it's like
you know, all these great moments. Well, it is something to look back on and certainly to be proud of. And then, of course, at the time, you're working hard. You're just hoping that when you hit that button to record the press conference,
goes.
Everything works.
That's exactly right.
That's the pressure on you.
That's exactly right.
We mentioned Kaywood Ledford and of course, there are so many of us that grew up listening to Kaywood and his I say memorable calls. It seems like they're almost all memorable. Just turning on the radio and listening to him was a treat. And you actually got to work for him because, as fans may not know the chronology, but there was a period of time there where Kaywood decided to move to Lexington. He had been in Louisville as a broadcaster with WHAS for many, many years and had an opportunity. He and Jim Host were teammates in this and starting Kaywood Ledford Productions, and you
That's
were
right.
part of that. So tell me about that.
Got to work with Tom Wallace, who was the editor, Kim Ramsey, who still runs part of the UK network rights holder, JMI group. And so we were all part of Kaywood's little group there that he had his newspaper, mm-hmm. and then of course he had multiple radio shows that he had around the state on a daily basis or tri-weekly basis, some of the longer shows, and so I got to participate by going out and interviewing various folks in the industry, especially if it's basketball, football, or horse racing, or just notable of interest. He would have a little feature that he would do three times a week. So I had to basically produce all those. I would go out and actually do the interview, do the ghostwriting for him, let him script it, and we would knock it out. Or he would have a 60-second comment that aired on stations all over Kentucky that aired daily. And so we'd have to take an opinion on a particular hot topic of du jour, you know. And so I got to do that. But then he had his newspaper, too. And that newspaper and Tom Wallace's editor really helped me refine my writing skills, which made me just a better PR guy because so much I learned on a daily basis serving as an assistant editor. There was just a couple of us. We had the various writers that were Bob Watkins, out of Central Kentucky. Even Jersey Red at one point in time during the Patino era came on and wrote a column, and that was always inflammatory to some degree. But then there's Kaywood, and Kaywood is like the consummate. When you talk about class, there wasn't anybody that had more class that I've met in my career than Kaywood Ledford. Mm-hmm. And it's not what he showed just on the court. He was like that 24 hours a day. And whether it was in his office dealing with Jim Host or us or others in that family, he just exuded class from start to finish. And that was probably the thing that most impressed me. That and his work ethic, Keith, because even right to the last game, he studied, He studied his game notes. He studied, made his notes. He studied his rosters as if it was the first game, and he had a, you know, had all that competition like he did back in the 50s when he started, and everybody had a radio station at the game, and there was no analyst, and it was just you. And if they didn't like what you were saying, they were going to change the channel, listen to somebody else. So you had to be the best of the best, and Kaywood was among the best of the best, and he kept that same routine all the way through his career. And I think that's probably the thing that's most impressed upon me and probably helped me in my career.
Yeah, that's one of those situations where if you just, in addition to doing the work that's in front of you, keep your eyes and ears open and learn from somebody like that, you can, that can serve you forever.
As we even tell our interns today, you know, what we tried to do back then was not prove ourselves. We tried to improve ourselves, and we, that's the same message. It hasn't changed, and you just try to be a sponge. I mean, you don't realize you're going through life and you're living it. You don't realize you're with greatness or around greatness, and that's what's happened a bunch. I've been very blessed to be a part of that.
Well, you eventually worked with the KHSAA, and Julian Tackett was a guest of mine a few weeks ago, and the commissioner, of course, in the KHSAA, you're dealing not only with the sports that go on, but it's a different situation in dealing with high school coaches, and of course the players are still young kids who are at home, meaning the parents are involved, and so tell me about your stretch there.
Well, the KHSAA was awesome because Billy Wise is one of the nicest guys, and he was the guy that took over the KHSAA when it just about burned to the ground. And I say that figuratively, obviously. They had some financial issues. They had taken on too much debt building a new building out on Winchester Road, same one they're in now. Mm-hmm. And Billy had to step in. If it wasn't for his demeanor and how people just wanted to help Billy, I'm not sure the KHSAA would be what it is today under Julian. And so to have that opportunity, followed up by getting to work for the first African-American who was the commissioner of a state athletics association anywhere in the country, and that was Lewis Stout. Sure. And Lewis I'd known. I'd grown up with his son, Juan, who was a year older than me, also lived out here in North Fayette County. And so I'd known Lewis a long time, but to have that opportunity to see how he blossomed as a commissioner, and he took that responsibility too of being the first very seriously. I mean, it was a pretty cool stretch. And then you don't know this, Keith, but I was also a high school then college football official. Okay. So I had a lot of relationships in the high school ranks as it was, because I was pretty well thought of, and I was trying to move up the ladder in that, and it was all happening at the same time. So, you know, Julian was the same way. He also officiated football, and so he and I worked some championship games even at the collegiate level, and we were, you know, here we were 28, 29, 30, 32 years old, and rolling through there. So it was, I mean, that was really, that probably taught me how to balance multiple events at once, because you had so many different sports. We had a small staff. You're trying to please a lot of folks. And, of course, the only calls that come into the KHSAA are complaints. It's either somebody's transferred, somebody's cheating, I got screwed by an official on Friday night, whatever it may be. It is the most thankless job of all of sports. And so tip of the hat to Julian, Butch Cope, the rest of the crew out at the KHSAA, because they don't get the love they deserve.
Well, you're right in that when he checks his messages, or Butch or any of them, chances are there's not going to be too many that are going to say, hey, you all are doing a great job, keep it up. You
know, zero.
It just doesn't work like that.
It does not work like that.
And that's probably true of a lot of jobs, but it's especially true with people who work in high school athletics. So being an official, of course, falls into that category. Mm-hmm. And so tell me just a bit about the officiating then. Is it something you really enjoyed?
Really enjoyed, and was so close I was trying to get in the SEC. And just, you know, that was my goal. I wanted to be an SEC football official, and they weren't taking young guys. It's different than basketball. Like football, it's all older guys, and if you played in the league, that's who they'll pick first. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Joe Fetterspiel comes to mind. Joe, All-American in Kentucky, played for the Saints, the whole deal, decides he wants to officiate. You know, he's 45 years old, goes out. They put him in as an umpire. He works one season, and he's an SEC guy. And it's like, he doesn't know the rules yet. And it wasn't Joe's fault. I mean, they just fast-tracked him. He's Joe Fetterspiel.
Yeah.
And I love Joe. And Joe, and I've talked about this. But at the same time, you've got guys that have been just, you know, pounding it away for 10 years officiating, or 15 years, and have got a lot of experience and couldn't get a look. So we were really struggling. I was really trying to fight to get my way up. And I was one step away. We were working Mid-South. I worked the NAIA National Championship game in 1995 out in Oklahoma. And then I was being looked at by the OVC. That was the next step. And working EKU scrimmages, working UK scrimmages. I'd show up with stripes on anytime they called. Loved it. Loved the sport. Had played it in high school at Bryan Station. Just football was my passion, which is unusual. I'm not doing any football now, but it was my passion then. And then I got the call from Coach Pitino to come back and join the basketball program as the SID. And so I still have all my official stuff in a box. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been touched since.
Yeah. Well, that must have been a tough call in a way. I mean, if you devoted so much time and effort to officiating and getting close to where you wanted to be. Of course, the call from Rick Pitino is going to be like a lot once in a lifetime opportunity. So you got to make the move.
It was that once in a life opportunity, and I didn't even think twice. It was just like, all right, this is my dream job. And when I left as an intern from UK Athletics, I wanted to get back there someday as the basketball SID and to get a chance to go back. And as I told him, I'm going to be your good luck charm when he hired me. Mm-hmm. And then we went it the first year in '96. Then we're runner-up in '97. And then here comes Tubby. And I almost left for Boston. I got offered to go to the Celtics. Yeah. And I ended up staying, which was a good move. Mm-hmm. I'd probably still be in Boston. I didn't have it out of my system. I was loving what I was doing for Kentucky basketball, so I couldn't think about taking another job, even if it was with the Celtics with Coach.
Well, of course, Pitino had things going by the time that you rejoined the UK athletics department. So we know from his public persona, watching him coach and listening to his statements and things, that this is a high energy guy. And so if you're there around him all the time and working with him, what was that like?
I mean, he doesn't sleep. He doesn't. Thank goodness I wasn't a coach, because if things weren't going well, and fortunately they went well most of the time, right? Even that year we got swept by South Carolina, I believe, in 97, and lost on the road, and they stormed the court. And, you know, I'm the first person outside the immediate team folks that have to deal with him. Have to go, Coach, we got to go do media. I'm not doing media. Now, that's not how he said it.
No, it's probably a few more adjectives in there. And yeah, mm-hmm.
But I'm not doing media. And so, I think then the rest of the game, the whole loss and everything was my fault, actually, as he continued his tirade about not doing anything. And oh, man, he did not take losing well, hated to lose, full energy. I mean, 6 a.m. on a game day, we're playing pickup games in the Coliseum. Everybody's got their bedhead on, and if you're not checking your man, and he or she is wearing you out down low, he's gonna let you know real quick. Somebody's got who's guarding him? Yeah. You know, it's that same old turn. So he was it didn't matter. Business, pickup games, coaching the game. Everything he wanted to win. It could be a free throw shooting contest. He's going to win. Today, I'll still play golf with him now and then. And if I come out and I'm on fire, the rules will change to where he wins before that round's over.
Yeah. For fans who may not remember the stories that came out, those pickup games at Memorial Coliseum were legendary, weren't they?
They really were. And I think the only person I ever remember getting out of them was Herb Sendek. And he would claim he had an injury or something. And yet Herb would have to be in that weight room with the glass on the treadmill running at 6 a.m. while we played if he wasn't going to play. So even as an assistant coach, an adult who couldn't play the pickup game, you better be in there working out so I could see you.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of the attitude. But you would have friends of coach. You would have, obviously, the staff around. We'd all participate. He loved moments. He loved having folks around him. It was one big family. And, he had a penchant for gossip. So if you had gossip on something going on in the department, he wanted to hear about it, or he'd tell you what he had heard. And so he loved to chatter a little bit about that behind the scenes. But, you know, you always felt like you were going to the moon with him. Like, this guy, you could ride his rocket all the way to the moon. But when things didn't go well, you know, the lows were low, but the highs were high. And I think we had so many highs that you kind of forget about the lows now and then.
Yeah, you have to get past those things, and I guess you have to get past almost the hurdle after, say, every loss when he turns to you and says, "I'm not doing any media," and yet still continue to have a good working relationship to him. There's always a little bit of a challenge in that.
Well, and you know, one of the things that quick story, we had that 96 team, and everybody knew Kentucky was going to be the team to beat at the end of the day, even though UMass was having, you know, one heck of a season after they beat us. But even before the season, Sports Illustrated wanted to come in and do a full-fledged feature. So I talked him into it. He was kind of hesitant, too. And he loves his PR now. I mean, it's not like he tried to, you know, stay out of the cameras. But he comes in. I have to do a photo shoot. He complains about that. He's complaining about it all the time. Guy, like, moves in with us for a week. Like, he's there. Next thing you know, he's interviewing Joanne. He's going over and taking her to get a cup of coffee. I mean, he's full all in on this Patino story. Well, the article doesn't come out at the start of the season. It was done in the fall, pretty much October. He's writing the article. They put it on ice. Like what's going on? Well, it just sits. The story sits. And they wait until the March Madness issue, and he's the cover. And it's him with that raging face, if you remember. And then it's him pulling all the characters. We did all these photos. We went out to Claiborne Farm. I mean, the whole deal. Photos everywhere. Photo shoot. A lot of time spent. Didn't use one photo. They used an action shot from a game with him in full-on rage. And then everything in the article was negative, just absolutely negative. It brought up his time at Hawaii and the issues he had there. They painted this picture that he's drugged Joanne around, tied to a basketball goal. I think that was even the caricature. Yeah. And it was just all came out. Oh my goodness. We got an advanced copy of the article, and Keith he read it, and goes. He goes, "Well, I told you we shouldn't have done it." First thing he said. Second thing is, "But I'm not surprised how it came out. So it's all good. That I'm not going to worry about it." Then the overnight shows up the next day with the actual magazine and the cover and the caricatures all included. So the one before was just the story. Now we've got the whole package. Now he's pissed. I mean, like, he's livid. "I can't believe how they're portraying me. Brooks, they're never coming to another game at Rupp. I'm never doing another interview with Sports Illustrated as long as I live." I mean, here came the protocols. And, of course, I'm thinking as a young first-year guy, I mean, I'm 4 months in, and I got Sports Illustrated doing a major story, 12 million subscribers all around the globe. This is going to be great for Kentucky basketball. Feather in my cap. I'm loving life. Couldn't have been worse. Couldn't have been worse. I felt like I was the dumbest PR guy of all time. And so, you know, like anything else, we started winning. We kept winning. It fell quickly into the background. But, boy, there was a week there that it was not so much fun.
I was going to say, when that happens, and, of course, you have – all you can do is help them make arrangements when they come in for the interviews and do as much planning as you can, but you have no influence at all over what's going to go in the article with a publication like that. And so all you can do is wait for it to come out and then just hang on.
We were even told that he was told to rewrite it three times to make it a little bit more with a bite. Mm-hmm. And then I think they supported it. That's why they didn't use the photos. The photos were nice photos, beautiful photos of Coach Patino around in the bluegrass and all that, didn't tell the story. So they had to manufacture more to the story, which is, you know, we see a lot of that today in media. We didn't see it that much back then. And so it was kind of our first step, my first step, a great learning experience as well, to know, you know, it's not all roses, even right, with the biggest publications and the greatest publicity you can generate. It's not always going to be the way you think it's going to be.
And that probably was especially surprising given that the team lost two games all year and won the national championship.
So, correct.
Well, most of us were around at that time watched that national championship game and saw the celebrations afterward. Tell me what that moment was like for you, because you've had this professional bump in the road, you might say, mm-hmm. with the Sports Illustrated article, but now here things are rolling again in the tournament and a championship occurs. What was that like?
Well, you know, you go through it, and not having been through an NCAA tournament with him, he got crazy game one. And, you know, we're in Dallas, Texas at Old Reunion Arena playing San Jose State in the first game. And we're going to beat them by 40. And he thinks we're going to lose that game. He went in with the attitude, they're better than us. And, like, his head was spinning around just as if we were coming off, a horrible loss, which obviously we had lost. Here's what's interesting, just to draw the dots together. We had lost in our 27-game win streak in the SEC championship against Mississippi State, who also made it to the Final Four, if you remember. And yet he didn't play Antoine Walker in the second half, supposedly because he was mad at him, when he really, from what we can tell, didn't want to have that win streak going into the NCAAs. So he was okay. If State brought it, he was going to let them. He wasn't going to do a whole lot. And sitting Antoine Walker down would be a really good way to help not win that game. And so he was okay and in a great spot. I mean, he was cheery after losing to Mississippi State in the SEC title game, which he would never be like that other than if it were one other time, which we'll talk about. But in that particular day, Keith, we're going into San Jose State, and he's like, his head's spinning around. He's nuts. He's crazy. He's not going to let these guys get off the gas pedal one bit to start the season. He did not want. And, of course, we just saw it with St. Peter's last year. You can have somebody sneak up on you, and he didn't want that to happen. And he took that first game more serious than he did the other five that year in that NCAA tournament. So that really sticks out in my head of just how miserable he was to be around until we won that game. Game two, we win. Next thing you know, we're off and rolling Minneapolis and so forth. And then right on back to the champion, you know, the Final Four in the Meadowlands. And, of course, you know, you're there. You got the star power. Ashley Judd's around the program. You're in New York City. Even though it's the Meadowlands, you're staying in New York. Your games are out at Meadowlands. And just all the fanfare, that's still the last regular NBA arena that the Final Four has been played in, was that year in 96. But it's just, you've got UMass. We've already played them. Him and, you know, Cal and Coach are best friends at the time. And so they're all there. Mississippi State's there. You know them well because they're one of your sister teams in the SEC. And then there's Syracuse, which, yeah, they're good. They've got a good player, but they can't beat any of us. And so, they turned out they got the better draw, got to play Mississippi State. And of course, Syracuse wins, and really the national championship was decided on that Saturday against UMass because that was the game. It was a rematch. It was the great guards that Cal had along with Marcus Camby, who really substantiated his place as one of the top draft picks that game in Detroit, game number two that year in the Grade Eight when they beat us. Had 32 points and, I don't know, 8 or 10 rebounds, whatever it was. But having that rematch, that was all we were focused on. We were so focused on trying to beat UMass. He couldn't lose to Cal, who he'd helped get the job. He couldn't lose to his old school, where he had great memories and a lot of friends and family. I mean, this all added up to be a nightmare for Coach Pitino if he didn't win that game. Mm-hmm. And so this is when it counted. And if he doesn't win it this year, he may never win it. And sure enough, hard-fought game. And then the next day you do media all day, if you remember. That's on Sundays. And then the championship, of course, is late on Monday. Well, we get to Sunday. Our guys can hardly walk from one room to the other. Tony Dell, Walter McCarty, Antoine, they're so exhausted from that game the day before. They just wanted, yeah, I mean, it's 2 hours of media plus we had an hour walkthrough or a little bit of a light practice. And these guys, all they wanted to do is go lay down in the bed. They were worn out from the game before. And so you're just, you know, you're in the grind, you're in the moment. Like, you're about to win the national championship, but you're not really thinking, I'm about to win the national championship. We just got to beat Syracuse now, and I hope we can get back up for that game. And that's really what it was about in 96 was somehow beating UMass and then surviving on Monday night, and that's what they did.
Yeah. Do you remember the details as the game ended? Are those things that just sort of run together after
they,
all these years?
They do kind of run together after all these years. You kind of get a feel, and you kind of learn after a while. Like, yeah, I can remember being at Rupp Arena when the Crispin brothers at Penn State just started dropping threes from anywhere on the court, and you're just watching going, we're struggling to score, and they're just throwing crap in it just from – you know, like the McDonald's Larry Bird, Michael Jordan commercial. And like, we're just not going to win this game. You always got a sense at some point in most of these games, because we were so good, where this is going to go. And the other thing I could always do is I could always talk to Jim O'Brien and Obi, who was his number one assistant and really his game manager, kind of the guy that kept coach level. He wasn't a yes man. He would just, you know, he would tell him what he needed to hear, even though he didn't want to hear it sometimes about substitutions or whatever. But I could always go to Obi, what do you think this week? Are we going to be okay? We're going to be okay. We'll win this one by 10. I just feel like this, you know, he had a good sense of where, how we stacked up against that opponent. And so we knew we could beat Syracuse if we just played our game. And those last few minutes, you know, you finally get a little bit of a buffer and you just know they're not going to overcome you and Tony's going to hit his free throws and everything. And you're just watching coach and you can just start to see the – he's not wanting to show that he's – this is happening, but you can start seeing it like it's this is actually going to happen for me. Yeah, that's what's going through his mind. I've been trying to get this for so long, and I think that's what we were probably more focused on than anything was how great this was for Coach Pitino, and he had, this is why he came back to Kentucky, and you know we'd had those several good teams from the Unforgettables in '92 that almost beat Duke to the year before when we got beat by North Carolina and Roderick Rhodes and that whole situation in '95. And like, this one's finally going to put us over the top. And it was almost as if, you know, I think it felt like Big Blue Nation stepped up, said something to, said basically, we hired you to do one thing, and that's win a national championship. This is your time. Thank you. Go win it. Let's get it done. And you can, then obviously, as soon as the horn blew, just the jubilation. I'll never forget, and you'll see it on the highlights now, of the three-way hug, I think, between him and Obi and Delray Brooks, the other assistant, and they're almost like dancing together in a three-way hug in front of the scorer's table, and it's just surreal to think back.
You mentioned at the start of our conversation about the reunion this past weekend of, as we record here in late February, of the 96, 97, and 98 teams. You had the great run with two championships and a runner-up finish. And, of course, Coach Pitino is now at Iona. His team had a game on Friday, a game on Sunday. But these days, you could probably squeeze in an appearance in Lexington. But what do you think are his feelings about ever making that return appearance here just to say hello to the fans and be honored or recognized at a game? What do you think his thoughts are on that?
I did see him tweet out this morning that he had read or some people had forwarded the comments that Tubby and some of the players had said about Coach and how beautiful they were, and he wished he could have been here. And, of course, he had, as you said, he had games Friday and Sunday, so it was impossible for him to make it down. You know, his banner hangs in Rupp, and I don't think the program, even with Coach Cal and all he's done, would be where it is today if it hadn't been for Coach in the 90s. And what he was able to accomplish in those eight seasons to bring Kentucky back from the depths of despair and, the other sports – since we're on the Sports Illustrated theme, the other Sports Illustrated cover with the Richie Farmer lookalike that said shame on the on the back – and how badly that hurt coming out of the Eddie Sutton era and all that was that entailed. And so Coach brought us hope. He brought hope back for this program. Like we said, you know, this is one of the few major things in the state of Kentucky that gives people pride and lets them say they're proud to be a Kentuckian. And it's that Kentucky basketball program. That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, when you talk about horse racing, now bourbon. Bourbon's always been good, but it was never as popular. But Kentucky basketball for how many years? You know, I did the 100th year cover. I mean, I launched Big Blue Nation or coined that for our program back about that same time in 2000. And yet this program goes back to the 20s with success. And then obviously the Rupp era and everything else. But you're carrying the pride of an entire state on your shoulders. And you have to have somebody brash and having the ability to take it. That's why Coach was successful. That's why Calipari's successful, is they have that mentality that they're not intimidated by that responsibility. And so I love the fact that we continue to honor them. And I think there's a time he's going to come back. He's going to be well received. And I think Big Blue Nation appreciates everything that he did during his tenure here.
And Coach Smith has returned now on a couple of occasions and got a very nice reception. He had a different approach, but also had to handle that job just as Patino did, just as Calipari has had to do. When they had the changeover, you considered going to Boston, then stayed with the program. What were your impressions there as Tubby Smith took over?
I assume he was going to be just as crazy as Coach Patino in a loving way, and couldn't have been more wrong. You know, Tubby's dad, you would probably have heard him say it time and again, son, don't ever get too high, don't ever get too low, just kind of stay even. And that was such an opposite approach from Coach Patino, who, you know, when they draw that in Psych 101, that box up on the chalkboard and said, this is when you're a little crazy and you're up and down outside that box. That's Coach P. And then you got Tubby, who's just a straight line across. Never got too high, never got too low. I think his biggest, he was so humble. Like, we win it in 98, and I'll never forget, we're out of the court, and I'm grabbing him, we got to go do the CBS interview. He goes, what are we going to do now? I said, well, we're going to go cut that net down, then we're going to go cut that net down. He goes, that sounds like a good plan. Yeah. So, I mean, he was just along for the ride. I think he was enjoying it as much as the fans were. And it was this past Saturday, as you said, when they recognized the teams, they announced Tubby last. And if you recall, they started chanting his name, Tubby, Tubby. And the flood of memories came right back, because in 98 in San Antonio, for those listeners who were there, and there was a lot of them there, we had half the dome. We win the first game of the semifinals that year against Stanford, I guess it was. And we do our media in the back, and then I've got to escort him from one end of the dome to the other around the court to do the halftime interview of the second game. The game Utah was playing in, and it's going to be with CBS up in the corner in their little perch. And so we walk out, and the other game's going on. Our crowd starts chanting, Tubby, Tubby, over and over again, and you felt like you were walking out there with Elvis. And I don't think he was ready for that either. And he still wasn't ready the other night for it. And he's heard it multiple times now. And you saw him wipe his eyes as the crowd continued to chant it Saturday. And I think he appreciates the time here as much as they appreciated him and what he accomplished. You know, his was a little bit more tumultuous. Obviously, starting out, tough first year, lose to Ole Miss on Valentine's Day, February 14th. That was our last loss of that season. But at the time, I go in to take him out to do the media back in the locker room, Keith, and he's just got his arms up on a file cabinet in the little office there at Rupp, and his head down in his arms. I mean, he's really upset about this in a different way. Like, some people act out, he just kind of, you know, withdrew, and he's just, you could just see he was frustrated. Well, about that time, CM comes in and kind of gives him a little bit of a hug. Attaboy, it's going to get done. You're going to be fine. You've got this team almost where you want it. Just keep fighting. And as we all know, they started the 6 a.m. practices back They wanted to try to just change up the vibe there at the end of the season. They suffered through Jeff Shepard with a high ankle sprain. They suffered through Allen Edwards' mom or grandmother passed away.
I think it's mother.
Mother, yeah. Right? And mother passed away, and then he had to miss some time. And that's all happening right as March is starting. And like, oh, crap, you know, here we're trying to get over the hump, and now we've got just regular basketball life getting in the way. And yet we just started – everything started just kind of falling into place, and people got hot. Jeff Shepard couldn't miss, and Scott Padgett hadn't missed. And then, you know, you get on into the tournament, and you talk about games and memories, the Duke game in 98 in the regional final. And we're down 17 with 9 to go, and they've gotten every loose ball, and by the way, called timeout before they fell out of bounds for every loose ball. And so they're out of timeouts, and we go on a run. And, you know, we always say we came back from 17 down with 9 to play to beat Duke to go to the Final Four. We actually came back from 17 down in about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, we closed that gap in a blink of an eye, and they had no timeouts to call because they had been wasting them with hustle plays, if you will. And Tubby wasn't called a call timeout. We just kept rolling. And of course, I think that established, that obviously that season alone created Tubby's legacy. But we had some awfully good teams there, including the last one I was at, too, in 2003, where we were the number one seed. And then Keith Bogans goes down with an ankle injury, and Dwayne Wade decided to show us he was going to be an NBA All-Star. Because if you remember, there's a trivia question that I've come up with, Keith, and it was who is the best player? There was an argument in 2003, so those Louisville fans that are listening – it was between two players in the Metro Conference or whatever league it was at the time on who the best player was. One was argued to be Dwayne Wade, and the other one was Reese Gaines.
Okay.
And Reese never had the career, and no. Dwayne goes on to be a multiple All-Star and one of the greatest players of all time. And here they were, you know, he throws a triple-double down on us in our what was really our second or third road game as the number one seed, which should never have happened in 98. We were playing in, I guess that was Minneapolis is where that game was. And we got just smoked by Marquette. But that was, I mean, we had some really good teams that just didn't catch a couple of breaks that would have brought even another title to town pretty quick.
Well, bringing us to 2003 was about the time that you thought about becoming an entrepreneur, and that is to talk about a big decision and stepping off the cliff and all of that. But you must have had given it some thought over the years. How did that come about?
It really came about by it started with the 100th season of college of Kentucky basketball. And you say, well, how does that play? Well, it wasn't that I was tired of all those seasons because I was just 8 years in, but it you know, 8 years is pretty much every day. Three quarters of the year.
People say it's not a job. It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle.
In some cases, it's your life.
It's your love, and you better love it because it there's days it doesn't love you back, but you're in it, and you don't realize it's just kind of a grind, just like anything else. But it's got some, you know, great options that are embedded within it, and opportunities. But it came along, I'd reached out to Rick Avar, who was Coach Pitino's business partner and Jamal Mashburn's business partner. And they had a group called the MAP Group. And, of course, for those that know, they own the Toyota dealership here in Lexington and the Lexus dealership. And, you know, they had some Outbacks at the time. And I think they own a bunch of Papa John's as well as some other business endeavors. So they've been very successful outside of basketball. And a lot of it's credit to Rick Avar. And I called Rick because I knew two people. We did a poll, if you remember, of the 100 years of Kentucky basketball, the all-time top five fan vote poll. And it turned out Tony Delk and Jamal Mashburn were two of the five, along with Issel, Macy. And who was the fifth? I'll have to stop and think about that.
Maybe Jack Evans?
It was Goose. It was Goose. And so I was going to say it was Richie, but it wasn't Richie. Yeah. It was definitely Goose. And so those were the five. Well, we're trying to get them all back for the game to recognize him during the All-Star break. And so I called Rick to kind of get Avart to get that coordinated, to get Mashburn and Delk, who he still had pretty good relationships with through their businesses. And we were trying to, I mean, they were still playing. And so we were going to try and fly them back, fly them in on private jets, whatever we had to do to get them here, and kind of had it all teed up. Well, as it turned out, they both backed out. Couldn't make it in. Had to tape it. It was just tough. It was just tough on the schedule. And so a couple weeks goes by, and Avar calls me up and says, hey, Coach Pitino and I are thinking about starting a little something, sports business on the side. I want to talk to you about it. Can you talk to us? I said, I'll be glad to talk to you when the season's over. Mm-hmm. So we get done with that season in 03 and circle back to him, and he made me an offer to step out and be an entrepreneur. And it was a big decision, a big leap of faith. And I asked myself one thing, you know, what's the worst case scenario? Worst case is I'm going to learn something if I do this, and I can always get back in maybe at a higher level. Because one of my frustrations, no fault of anyone's, but our administration had changed 3 times in 3 years. CM had retired. Larry Ivey had taken over. And then Mitch got hired. And so, boom, 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 it kept happening. Right about the time I felt like my career should have been taking off within athletics to move up the ladder. I didn't want to be the sports information director all the time. That wasn't my goal. I just wanted to kind of – I didn't have to be AD. I just wanted to move up. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't happening. And now I felt like, you know, and I don't blame Mitch. He came in and hired 5 guys and brought them with him and put them over each department. And I felt like, wow, this is going to take a little while. Take a little while now for this to shake back out and me to get the opportunity. And I don't know if I have the patience to do that anymore. And because I feel like if I stay too much longer, then I'll always be an SID. And I did not want to be the Bud Ford of Tennessee necessarily, or the Russell Rice. Those guys are great. They loved it. They do an unbelievable job. They've never forgotten a stat about either program, but that wasn't what I was in it for. I wanted to do it for a while and then move on. And moving out ended up being the quicker option than moving up. So I took the leap of faith, jumped out, didn't really have too much on the docket, and we just started creating things. We brought Andy Roddick to Lexington and played a tennis exhibition at Rupp Arena. And then we landed the U.S. Women's National Team in soccer and took them to Papa John's Stadium and let them play Japan prior to the 2004 Olympics in a friendly. And we just started getting our feet wet in the event space. And then I got circled back to CM, and he got me with the Basketball Hall of Fame, and we started running an annual event to benefit the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield. So that brought me back into hoops, where I belonged. I could tell real quickly, I can make a living out of running basketball games. And so got into that. It started taking off. I bought the company out. Then sold half of it to Jonathan Blue in Louisville and became part of Blue Equity Sports and Television. And next thing you know, we sold the whole thing to a French firm, a French sports agency called Lagardère. And right during the recession, 2010, coming out of that. And so I worked for the French for a couple of years, running the collegiate division of that organization, and then had a chance to slide out again and start BD Global in 2012. And so I never could have predicted that route, never knew exactly where my career was going. I knew I wanted to be the Kentucky basketball SID. That was my goal. And I set that goal, and I almost got hired the year before. I was in a finalist group to be the football SID, and Tony Neely got hired instead. And CM, I think, had a little something to do with that because Tony was his SID at Vandy.
Vandy, yeah.
And so... You know, God was looking out for me because here, a year later, I get the actual job I want, and that's in 1995 as basketball. And I didn't think it was going to happen there for a while, but I get the job I want and bounce in there. And I thought at that point, I've landed my dream job. We'll just see where the career takes us from here. And that's kind of how I have approached it. And once you get in and kind of figure out, I can really do a lot of basketball, then let's get something else that's non-NCAA related. So we got into the golf space, too, because I love golf and I'm passionate about it. And I know if you're passionate about something, good things can happen. So now we have 2 divisions of golf and basketball, and we've kind of made a pretty good little business out of it. So, you know, it's neat. I'm at a much different level now, Keith, than I was then. You know, if I need to reach Scott Drew at Baylor, I just call Scott Drew at Baylor. If I need to talk to Bill Self at Kansas, I call Bill Self. Mick Cronin at UCLA. I mean, all these guys, we all know each other. We've been in the business for a while, and I think that's what's benefited me is, one, I've got that Kentucky basketball brand attached to me, and that's priceless. Whether a lot of people think about it as a player. Oh, you come to Kentucky, you're going to play here, you'll be taken care of for life. You can always get a job, you can always do this, and they're right. But it also applies for those that have the opportunity to work with the program. And getting that chance to work at Kentucky basketball has set me up to do everything else I've done today. I would be nowhere if I didn't have that chance.
And like we talked about earlier with your association with Kaywood, you kept your eyes open and you had your dream job, but at the same time you could see there were other things out there and you could see how to make the most of those opportunities.
And you know what? Everything kind of falls in line to your point. Kaywood helped me get the Kentucky basketball job because Kaywood put a call into Rick. And who'd Rick love?
No,
Kaywood Leffert.
Absolutely.
And so when Kaywood gave his blessing to Coach Pitino that Brooks is your guy, he'll do the job for you, then that paved the way for me to get that opportunity.
We all heard as fans that Pitino and Kaywood had such a good relationship. Why do you think that was?
You know, I think he never looked at Kaywood. He knew Kaywood was class. He knew Kaywood worked hard. Kaywood never asked for anything. Kaywood just did his job and was, I think, always fair in his comments. I remember Kaywood telling me, Kaywood would never, he wasn't just all, you know, chocolate and roses on the air. I mean, he would, if you weren't playing well, he's going to tell you you weren't playing well. And I think one time, it may have been in his book as well that he wrote, that he was talking to Rupp and he thought he was in trouble because he had said a few things about how poorly one of his teams were playing one time. He goes, you have, anytime we're not playing well, you have full authority to burn our ass, is basically what he said. And Kaywood always took it like, all right, I'm just going to be honest. I've got to paint that picture for the listener. And sometimes you got to paint the ugly picture. And he was able to do that. And I think he earned a lot of respect in that. I mean, he was the best in the business, right? I mean, he's doing the Final Four. And obviously the association with Jim Host helped get him, but he was solid. Nobody even questioned that Kaywood Leffert was the guy on the NCAA tournament, whether Kentucky was in it or not. And then to have him, be the guy for so many years here, 39 years as voice of the Wildcats, it's an incredible, incredible history. And I think Coach Pitino just from day one fell in love with him, fell in love with him.
Brooks, it's been a fascinating conversation to hear you reflect on all these experiences, and let me kind of wrap things up by, first of all, thanking you for your time, but also just maybe a nod to the future here for BD Global. I mean, you seem to have, through your life, been able to focus on the present, but always a little bit of an eye on the future. So what's ahead?
You know, I'm 59 now, and I don't feel like I'm 59, and I'm loving. A guy told me when I got to 50, he goes, it's next 10 years when you want to make your money. And, that'd be good. at the time, I'm just kind of getting along. But, all right, let's see if we can't do that in the next 10 years. And that's about the time we got into private business of my own. I got out of the bigger agency and made the move and started BD Global. And we've learned a lot. You know, we've lost a lot of money. We've made a lot of mistakes. And that's how you learn to be a better business person is weathering the bad times. And, you know, we had a couple in from the Barbasol event in 2018 that didn't go so well to the pandemic right behind it in 20. And to still sit here today with our company, and it's a multimillion-dollar company on an annual basis, and seeing where it can go. We're just about to get a partnership agreement done with Fox Sports to produce some more college basketball programming for Big Fox. ESPN's already our partner. CBS Sports Network's already our partner, and CBS is. So, we've got a lot of great relationships, and that's kind of how we've built this business, is all on relationships that all started during my times at Kentucky, and we've just built out over these days. So I would like to add a few more golf events to our portfolio. I would still like to keep our basketball where it is. I mean, we're doing some really big basketball games and events. We leave next week to go run the Big West Conference Tournament. No other operator runs a postseason tournament at the NCAA Division I level. And so we have the men's and women's event out there. We're working for the G League now, running all the home games for the Ignite in Las Vegas, which is the NBA's G League team. And so one opportunity always leads to a couple more. We're going to keep the same attitude, and let's just see where this goes.
All right. Well, best of luck to you, and thanks again for the time today.
Thanks, Keith.
Okay.
You've been listening to The Sports Page with Keith Elkins, an exclusive podcast from 91.3 WUKY, produced by Alan Lytle. Our theme music is Peanut Butter and Jam by Illogical Bit, available at soundcloud.com/illogicalbit. Subscribe to The Sports Page through Google Play or at our website, wuky.org.